Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Tim McCabe to the broadcast. Tim is a Senior Vice President and Chief Information Officer of Delphi, a leading global supplier of electronics and technologies for automotives and other market segments. Tim is responsible for all strategic and operational information technology activities in support of Delphi's global business and the adoption and integration of new technologies. Tim's been with the company since 2006, when he joined Delphi Information Technology as the Director of Strategy and Sourcing. In this role, he led the organization's restructuring activities, as well as the deployment of the Global Supplier Management Organization. Prior to joining Delphi, Tim worked at General Motors, where he served in a variety of leadership positions as the lead director of global outsourcing, including leading the largest transaction in the IT industry. Tim has a bachelor's degree in philosophy from Oakland University and a master's degree in management from Walsh College. I recently caught up with Tim in his office in Troy, Michigan, and our conversation focused on World-Class IT Principle 1, people, as he discussed the processes he uses to assemble a strong team. Principle 4, IT and business partnerships, as Tim discussed the importance of communicating and educating colleagues on the value of IT investments and the advantages of having worked in a variety of functions prior to his time in IT, as well as a variety of other topics. Well, Tim McCabe, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Peter, thanks for inviting me, and even better yet, thanks for even thinking of me as a world-class IT person. So I appreciate this opportunity.
Oh, it's our great pleasure. Thank you so much. Well, Tim, you are the Senior Vice President and Chief Information Officer of Delphi. And for those who may not be so familiar with your organization, I wonder if you could take a moment and introduce it as well as your role in the company.
I'd love to. So Delphi is a global provider of automotive solutions that has about 32 original equipment manufacturers that we provide solutions for their vehicles around the globe. Delphi has been around for almost 100 years. We have 32 technical locations and about 150 manufacturing spots and about a total of 250 places where we conduct business around the globe. And I've been with Delphi for a little more than 8 years, having come in here originally to help during our transformation in the 2005-2006 timeframe, have over the years moved from the leader for our strategic sourcing and strategy activity into the role of the CIO in 2008. And have had the opportunity over the course of these years to be part of the overall business transformation that we've gone through and the industry has gone through. So I'm now sitting as a Senior Vice President and CIO with the global responsibilities for the technology team, reporting to our Chief Technology Officer. It also provides me with opportunities to play a role in thinking through and helping to look at technology opportunities for our business.
And you mentioned, of course, that you took on this role in 2008. It's hard to even think about that year without remembering the economic malaise that greeted us all then. And obviously, you are in an industry that was among several that was most acutely impacted by that. And I know you've got some interesting perspectives on the role that IT did play, in fact, during trying times in addition to good times. Can you talk a bit about what that experience was like in your early days and the way it helped you form your original plans as CIO?
So if we just dial the clock back a little bit to late 2005, Delphi had spun out from General Motors as an independent company in 1999. Over the course of time in the early 2000s, it became clear to the leadership that the position we had in the marketplace and the way we were managing in our base was not going to be sustainable. Had to go through a Chapter 11 filing. Think of that as the beginning of the transformation. In early 2006, I was recruited after having spent about 17 years with General Motors to come and join Delphi to be part of the overall transformation of the IT activity as well well as to play a role in the overall company transformation. While some people thought it was risky, and certainly in hindsight it was risky, I did leave a good career at General Motors and joined Delphi. And the overall objective at that point in time was to lead a three-prong strategy to get our costs in line with the company's revenue, which means we were going to focus on outsourcing, we were going to focus on driving company to some common platforms, and then third, we were going to be working with the internal IT team to get capabilities to line up with the realities of the business. So we played a role in helping to return some of the money that was being spent around the globe on information technology. We had to reduce the headcount through our outsourcing. We also drove a large $200 million SAP program. So over the course of 3 years, we were able to get the costs for IT down from over 2% to roughly 1.2%. And we sustained that spend as we went through the overall transformation, footprint rotation, and product offerings that the business went through. The objective through all of this was to be able to reduce the cost without creating any additional business risk. So number one objective was to ensure we created no spills, and that's the language we use inside of our industry to say, do not cause us to miss a shipment to one of our customers. So job one in that regard was to reduce costs, improve services, and to better our position in the marketplace. So that was what we did first and foremost. Secondly, was to transform a relatively large insourced IT organization that was mostly federated and regionally operated into a single global organization. So in that regards, we focused on driving towards common, which means everybody had to get a new job title with a job description. We wrote and created over 200 common processes so we could execute as a global team. We retrained the staff that we retained as we went through the outsourcing. That required a tremendous amount of organizational change because it wasn't just the IT professionals, but it was also all of our business colleagues who we had to convince that this transformation we were undertaking inside of the broader transformation was going to lead to better services, a more responsive organization that would be focused on the higher level business requirements as opposed to those things that people would consider heat, light, and water, which would be along the lines of network and email and hosting. So that was a big part of our change, was to not only inform but educate our business colleagues for the change we were going through and the value we were going to bring back to them. So that was a very big part of my formative years at Delphi.
You mentioned earlier, Tim, that your first role was actually a sourcing role as a director of information technology strategy and sourcing management. You've just talked about the significant role that rethinking the model of leveraging outsourced resources to a greater extent and the value that that might bring to the organization. I know a lot of companies who have undertaken such transformations, especially with the use of outside resources, that the early stages of the shift from internal to external resources can be awkward as those external resources are learning about your organization, as you're setting up a rapport, as you're building the muscle memory of the relationship, so to speak. Can you talk a bit about the practices that you undertook in the early days of that change to make sure that your external partnerships were running as effectively and as efficiently as possible as soon as possible?
Sure. You have to start that at a very early stage before you make your decision. So the things that we did here, which I believe at that time were fairly new to the industry because we were a company in transformation and we were a company that some may look at and say, I don't want to engage in a long-term arrangement with an automotive supply company that is in bankruptcy. We started off doing what we call executive alignment sessions, which is where we would bring in the CEOs of the large ITO companies and they would come and spend time with the then CIO, Betty Walker, and myself, and we would just talk about Delphi. We would talk about our goals and our objectives. We would talk about how we were being financed throughout our transformation. And we would look to see if our goals as a company and the goals of the potential suppliers were aligned relative to how they wanted to grow their business and where we were positioned as a company. Because again, in order to get some of the leverage and efficiencies we were looking to achieve, we had to have large companies that had global capability that could serve us in that manner. And we wanted to avoid having another large group of suppliers when we were done with our outsourcing. We started off with over 190 suppliers when I walked into Delphi, and we were looking to end up with three suppliers. So we spent the first months of this conversation with CEOs. Sometimes their CFOs would come in and spend time with the Delphi CFO, and we would go and have those types of conversations. And then if those turned out to be productive, where there was alignment relative to how we thought about IT, how we thought about technology, how we thought about the role of an ITO inside of a large company like Delphi, we would bring in the solutioning arms of these suppliers. They would meet with our team, and we would talk about the company. We would talk about the services, the technology, our equipment, where it sat, and we would go through some fairly formal, but not at a pricing or legal conversation, really around how do you do things, the suppliers, how do you deliver these services, and tell us about the companies you do it for. So there was a long process, months and months, sometimes this is 6 to 8 months of engagement before we would let the RFP out the door, just to make sure that we had identified senior leadership that was aligned with Delphi leadership, technical capabilities, footprint capabilities, and had enough resources to respond to Delphi. And then with that in hand, we would then release the RFPs and go through the RFP process of negotiating on price and terms and conditions and services. During our transformation, we outsourced many of the services that some organizations may not be, you know, willing or wanting to do. And as we have matured in that space, we have now found opportunities where we can bring back certain services where we believe Delphi IT should be, you know, leading the practice as opposed to buying the service. We have been, I don't want to call it self-correcting, but we have been incrementally looking at places that have become more strategic versus less strategic. We're now looking at and have been over the course of time bringing some of those services back.
Actually, sticking with that, that's very interesting, sure. Tim. How difficult a process has it been to unwind portions of those external partnerships? Did that mean having the foresight at the outset to have a prenuptial agreement, so to speak, that would allow you to make those sorts of changes with the least disruption possible?
Yeah, so we put a lot of flexibility into our agreements back in 2006 and 7 when we were doing the outsourcing. And of course now, you know, 7 years later, we've had many of these agreements expire and we've had chances to renew them. And so we've done it at the appropriate inflection points, because there hasn't been any big bang types of changes where we needed to just quickly go grab something. And also there's been the evolution of technology. Some of the things that are happening in today's world weren't even really all that possible in 2006 and 7. And need I say more about mobile apps or the cloud or, you know, software as a service or platform and infrastructure as services? Actually, we're really looking at appropriate inflection points to make those changes. Secondarily, what we're also not doing is we're refreshing the in-place infrastructure in certain of those legacy environments, but rather we're opting to jump to today's technology that allows us to bypass a lot of capital intensive or transformative intensive services and go to an offering that is much more lightweight when it comes to the transition transformation costs and allows you to plug and play. We're being very discreet in how we're doing it, but we're doing it in such a way that it's very impactful and our business colleagues can get a leg up very quickly. So one example I would give you is around the HR space, where we've now moved into a Workday environment. And some of that internal capability, both on the client side as well as the IT side, was really not that available. And we have since, as you might imagine, we've grown that capability inside the company, and it's working for us very well.
You mentioned one of the levers there to determine what was going to be brought back in was, in fact, those things that were growing in importance, growing in terms of their strategic importance to the organization. Can you talk a bit about those plans moving forward as we sit here?
Maybe just by example, we'll pick a few and talk about them.
Great.
So in 2005, six, email was viewed as almost the only way to disperse information and to connect in the environment. There weren't a whole lot of offerings except more of the static kind of email capabilities. But over time, what we've seen happen is the importance of email, while still very critical, is being not only replaced but enhanced by things such as the social enterprise, things such as tweeting, things that you could use with instant messaging, with collaboration capabilities, with link and some of the other instantaneous grabs that allows us to get to somebody without having to wait for a response to an email. When we saw this coming, we were very early on to adopt some of those early technologies. So we went with the Microsoft BPOS D before Office 365, and we have since been rolling heavily into what we call the personal productivity platform, where we're focusing a lot now in how we use Link with its very capable instant video and with screen sharing and with instant messaging. We're all in that space. We've also now found ways to share and collaborate with search. So we are very much into internal search. So we spend a lot of time working on how to leverage the internal search capabilities. And one would ask, why is that important? Well, more than half of our employees are engineers. And all of our engineers are very, very active in their respective technology fields. A lot of opportunity to share test and test findings and to share learnings when it comes to materials, raw and finished materials, and to start talking about test and test data and how to start leveraging that. So we said we should get smart around how to improve personal productivity for our workers. When everybody comes to work, what they really want from an employer is to be provided the appropriate tools and capability to get their job done as fast and seamlessly as possible. And so we've put a big focus on how do you enable an employee to get the most out of their time, both at work as well as away from work. So again, we're doing a lot to leverage the internet and some of today's technology with file sharing and data wherever you want, whenever you want it. So we're using that as an opportunity. So that starts to play into how do we see technology allowing the strategy of an organization to come alive.
And I've been compelled in this conversation and others that you and I have had, Tim, by the extent to which you think of yourself as a business leader first and as an IT professional second. And I actually knowing a bit about your background, it's not necessarily so surprising. As a philosophy major, as an undergraduate, you have a master's degree in management. You didn't necessarily have the classic beginnings from an education perspective of a technologist, but rather a broader set of perspectives. You spent time in the legal space within companies that you've worked with, at GM, for instance. And therefore, there are a variety of lenses that you probably put to problems that maybe the average CIO does not. And I wonder if you could talk a bit about that, your background, and how that has shaped the way in which you view your set of responsibilities and the way in which IT can, as you say, bring to life the imperatives of different parts of Delphi in this case.
Sure. So if we go back in time even further than the start of Delphi, but when I started my college education, like probably most young people in the 70s, the focus was a little different. When I first entered university, I found myself having taken a class, and I think it was in classical Greek philosophy, and I came under the spell early of Socrates and some of the early Greek thinkers. I was really attracted to the aspect of critical thinking, which is accept nothing, question everything. And maybe that was also the sign of the times. But I really fell under the spell of wanting to explore, and it was the curiosity quotient that I carry still with me is always wanting to understand more and to make sure that you have checked the four corners of something before you accept it as the truth and avoid the dogmatic take of what somebody says as being the truth. That was my early beginnings to think about things a little different and actually pride myself in challenging sometimes the what was always believed to be the conventional truth. And so with that as background, I had an opportunity early in my career when I first joined General Motors to be part of the legal staff to assist in the product liability group. That was very formative time for me relative to how to think about when things go right, when things go wrong, what should the response and reaction be by large companies? How do you take and manage those types of risks that are inherent in what is a very complex product, which is an automobile? Had that experience early on and great training from some really top flight attorneys and thinkers inside of General Motors. From that, I had an opportunity to spend time between, say, legal staff and the information technology team with part of their internal insurance group, where I was part of their business development and risk activity. And then eventually, I spent some time early on in the startup of the IS&S organization to help put together one of the first big deals after the EDS spinoff. I thought that was going to be a short-term opportunity, but it turned out to be more than a 10-year career working at General Motors IS&S group. That focus there was about outsourcing and supplier management and making sure that we were able to deliver services globally at a competitive price with suppliers that had great technical capabilities. I spent a lot of time in that arena looking at it through the lens, not so much of a technologist, but of a business enabling capability. I always and still do very much view IT as secondary to the business.
And I think that that's such an important perspective to bring to this, that it's not simply, investing in technology for technology's sake, but rather thinking about the value that the investment is going to bring to the organization, sometimes very sizable investments indeed. And actually, it strikes me, as with a number of functions that you've been a part of as a relative outsider. You were part of the legal team without a law degree. You've been part of the IT team without a computer science or an engineering background. Clearly, you are somebody who is an autodidact and very comfortable with exploring new topics that you are not an expert in, at least academically, and going deep relatively quickly. I imagine that lends itself well as really great IT leaders, as I know you to be one, are those who are good listeners and good empathizers and great at engaging the rest of the organization to understand what their needs truly are so that you can then lend your filter as IT leader as to what IT can do to bring those strategies, those plans, those wants and desires to life and perhaps even shape them a bit based on your lens that you bring to the conversation. Is it fair to say that because you've embarked on so many different parts of your career, coming in as a relative outsider, that you are very comfortable in sort of engaging people in conversation in new areas with a level of curiosity that is appropriate in order to do this job well?
So the answer to that question is, I hope so. I think leadership, first and foremost, should always be the best skill that you have as a professional, regardless of what your technical training and background is. If you're going to be responsible for people, for people's careers, for their extended families, to ensure that they have a place to work that will return to them both job satisfaction as well as the financials. First, you have to be somebody who understands what motivates people, what drives people's desires, and then how to harness that in a way that lets them get to their highest optimization as a professional in the office and as an individual who feels that they're cared for and recognized for doing high quality work. That's my number one focus. And number two is people. You as a leader can only be as good as the people that you surround yourself with. So to your point, I do not have the classical background in information technology, but I happen to think that that is falling away more and more. What I've learned in my role, both as a traditional outsourcer, financial driven decision maker with global experience in managing large transformative projects, be it IT enabled or not, is you have to ensure that the people you have around you are the ones who are capable of doing the work. So any gaps that I have, and there are many when it comes to technology-rich conversations, I ensure that I have people who are either working for me directly or who I've put in place a relationship and who I can leverage into these topics, can deliver and bring to me things that are current. And the way I see that as more valuable is that these people, be it outsiders or insiders, have the experience in the day-to-day delivery and development of those technologies, where as a leader, I can't find myself as a practitioner of the technology. I have to be a practitioner of the business outcomes, what drives our revenue, what drives our cost structure, and ensuring that the technology enables both top-line growth and bottom-line capability. So that's where I put my focus, leadership and people.
There have been a number of trends that you talked about, especially during the portion of our conversation where you were talking about the evolution of your own strategy as IT leader at Delphi. And I wonder, as you look to the future, are there other IT trends, business trends that particularly excite you that you're hoping to leverage to a greater extent?
You know, we're all watching and participating in this ongoing conversation around how do people get work done and what do people rely on to actually make decisions. And I don't want to use the word big data or the words big data, but clearly when you have access to information that 5 years ago, 7 years ago wasn't available because of the digital revolution, without being inundated by noise, I believe that the ability to make better decisions is going to be driven by your ability to access, synthesize, and action information when it comes to you in a multitude of ways. So I would say data wrapped around analytics and insights and driven to decision is going to continue to be a big part of where we see growth. Obviously, digital will bring with it all of its opportunities, and depending on what type of industry you're in, and then having the workers, employees, be able to access and manage that information that is part of their job, part of their curiosity, and part of their decisioning in ways that they couldn't consume by simply sitting in an office are also changing, I think, very much how work gets done around the globe. So that, I believe, is still very much in front of us. You know, we hear a lot of talk about the Internet of Things and sensors everywhere and data extraction, again, driven by the digital evolution, also is going to play a role in that. So that's still very much in front of us. And then, again, as we continue to see the capabilities of the technologists to make awareness of events of very much real time and to start taking that and packaging that capability into offerings also are going to continue to provide us with, I think, many years of exciting growth and innovation and regardless of the industry you're in.
Well, Tim McCabe, thank you so much for joining us on the Forum on World Class IT and sharing your perspectives and a bit about your experience that has made you the very successful IT executive you are today.
Peter, thank you. And I really appreciate, again, your taking the time to have this conversation with me. And obviously, every time I spend time talking with you and others, it makes me both more reflective and more energized for what's yet to come. So thank you.
listen to a podcast in a series we call MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World-Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the forum on world-class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategy's five principles of world-class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.